So today we are going to talk about going from a personal brand to a media business. But first, I realized, and I had some questions on the last one, of who's this other guy that's here?
Who is this and handsome fellow?
Bobby, who are you and why are you here?
Who am I? A question I ask myself every morning.
And also, where are you going after this life?
That is a great question. That one will take a longer podcast to answer. But who am I? I am a tech enthusiast. I work in tech as a strategist, former consultant, and I'm a venture capital advisor.
Do you consider yourself a tech enthusiast? Is that the...
I do, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
So you happen to be my brother-in-law, which is your most important claim to fame, actually, that you didn't mention.
Correct.
But... So Cornell MBA, went and worked at Bain for a long time as a consultant, as a strategy consultant. You didn't really do much tech stuff at Bain, right?
Actually, I spent
about
30% of the time in TMT.
And what is Bain? So what is Bain?
Bain & Company is a management consulting firm, work primarily with private equity funds and Fortune 500 companies.
What does a management consulting company do typically?
Get paid a lot of money to usually confirm somebody's bias inside of an existing company, but no, typically solving the biggest problems that the CEO or the C-suite might be focused on in a large business. So how to grow the business at scale, 3 to 5 year value blueprint creation, as well as performance improvement.
And so what would a typical assignment look like? Like, who's the client? What are they looking to solve?
Because Bain's like a pretty big deal, right? Like, Bain's not like a small little...
No, Bain's one... Yeah, so
It's a
top three. Top,
yeah, it's like a legit company, right?
It is a legit company, yes.
Well, the founders of the business built a great business model. And good example, you might get hired by an auto manufacturer to think through how they take on 2-3x market share in a given market, i.e. North America, which was actually a case I did do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really just a matter of breaking down where the business is currently at, the segments they're trying to target, and how they effectively go out and capture that.
And what do you do now?
I now work as a strategist and GM for a business unit at a tech software company called Podium. Primarily does SMB software tools for communications. So SMB, small businesses.
So in my trampoline park business, we actually got pitched by a company called Opinion back in like 2016, like right when we first got started. These guys came and it was all about like how Google reviews, like the underserved eyeballs that we weren't paying attention to. Basically, the pitch was pay us and we'll make sure that every customer that you have gets served a request to leave you a review. If they like give you a 1-star review, then we'll like route them away from Google. If they give you a 5-star review, we'll like push it to Google. And that was kind of like the genesis in 2015. When did Podium, because Podium was a Y Combinator.
Yeah, 2014 Y Combinator. Eric and Dennis, great. They're great videos out there. They're a podcast where they both kind of shared their founding story. But similar thing, father owned a small business. They saw an opportunity to help improve online presence in the form of Google reviews for that small business, tire shop in Canada. And created a product to solve that problem, make it really easy for a small business to capture reviews and increase ultimately the way you're found online.
And so with kind of state of the union right now in terms of the market, everything that I hear from the outside is that all of the people that are kind of the ilk of Podium, I assume, are down massively. And like the tide is rolling out in terms of the ability to go public and try to figure out how the kind of the late stage venture stuff gets finally monetized, gets out of these businesses. Do you feel like it's overblown what kind of the way that it's spoken about right now? Or do you think that there's much more pain to come? Like, where do you think that we are in terms of the tech market of kind of these later stage big companies?
Yeah, I'll speak more broadly, even outside of the experience of Podium. I mean, you hear some venture capital investors talking about this being a nuclear winter right now in tech investing. You see it in valuations. A lot of public tech SaaS companies are down 70% in terms of market cap. It's a tough market to raise in. Nobody wants to raise when they think their valuation is going to be low if the point is to raise capital.
Yeah.
And so IPOs have all but dried up. Everything I can see in terms of the environment around us, and in Utah, we have a pretty unique tech ecosystem. There are a lot of tech companies pound for pound relative to the population. I think it's been a slow market for a lot of the companies. in part because of the macro environment, right?
Yeah.
We're in a recession. Tech is a little bit out of favor. It probably was priced down first relative to the rest of the markets in the industry.
Yeah.
And yeah, you ride those storms. But look, we've been through down cycles. Some of us have lived through them. 2008. I'm fortunate to be surrounded by some great venture capital people who went through the dot-com bubble. This happens, right?
Yeah.
And the great thing about it is there are opportunities.
From the standpoint of like what you see in the SMB world of being kind of a service provider to SMBs, where do you think there will be the biggest opportunity from an acquisition? I look at SMBs to acquire all day, every day. What's the breakdown from Podium in terms of like brick and mortar businesses versus non-brick and mortar businesses from a percentage breakdown?
We don't play in e-com. So the vast majority are brick and mortar or physical services, local services, like an HVAC
company.
Like a
chiropractor.
Yeah. Exactly.
Massage therapist, whatever.
Yeah, small businesses of, well, local. Very similar to your company or previous
Trampoline
company.
Parks.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, you're on the front lines in terms of like customer. You have the info in terms of are customers down or not down?
Yeah, my view is pretty optimistic actually on the SMB front.
Really?
Yeah, I have, you know, a number of colleagues that are more focused in the enterprise space, and that is really where things have stopped, right?
Sure.
Budgets freeze as soon as a big corporation thinks crap, a recession's on the horizon.
Sure.
I'm not going to plan to spend money now. I need to hold on to that capital, that war chest.
Yeah.
SMBs don't quite function like that. They don't forecast like a Fortune 500 company. And the good news is, as long as customers keep coming through the door, they're going to keep spending the way they do. They're going to keep thinking about growth the way that they do. And so investing in products like Podium or other products, we continue to see that. So we have not seen a slowdown in terms of customer interest or their end customers coming to them.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you see that kind of across the board? Or do you think if you had to pick a guess between like higher end luxury style, like I would say med spa, I don't know what kind of the services that appeal to more higher end things versus like the essential staple things. If you had to place a bet on like what is ultimately going to get affected more over the long run with inflation,
yeah,
presidential elections, blah, 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 particularly in the brick and mortar space, what would the business be that if I'm like, here's a med spa investment that I think that you should put your dollars into, what's the business type that you would be like, I don't like that. I don't like that sector right
get
now.
Yeah. Look, if it's a discretionary purchase, it depends on how deep the recession is that we're in, right? There are really conflicting data points at the macro level in terms of GDP growth, inflation, et cetera. It's hard to get a read on what this recession actually means for the end consumer. I'm assuming that debt levels are going up at the consumer level.
Yep.
But we're also seeing still record demand for things like automobiles, right? And so it's interesting, but yeah, truly a discretionary purchase, i.e. what you might do at a med spa. I'd probably be a bit slower to invest in that right now.
Like a Botox thing or like laser hair removal or something?
Yeah, if it's elective cosmetic surgery. Again, I don't know how deep this recession is, but if I'm an end consumer wanting that service, I might wait 6 months or 12 months. What's 1 year for body sculpting if I don't know what the future holds for my own job if I'm an individual consumer?
Got it.
But if a car breaks down, I need a new car, right? If I total my car, I need a new car.
Yeah.
If my heating and air unit goes out, I need a replacement for that. I need that serviced. And so when I think about SMBs, a lot of them truly are providing essential services, which is why I think that they're a little bit more recession resistant in this environment.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I've come out of the brick and mortar space. I was in it for 8 years and I just got out of it. And what I saw in the brick and mortar space from, you know, my brother started that thing in 2011 to 2023. I think most real estate is massively inflated, which means lease rates by definition are inflated. I think that like your common area maintenance and like particularly like your premise liability insurance and all of those things, to the extent that you have guests that are coming into your doors on a frequent basis, like, you know, in the entertainment space you do, obviously anything that you're servicing somebody, whether it's a cool sculpting thing or whatever, insurance tripled from the time that we started to the time that we exited. Like the exact same amount of insurance used to cost us $60,000 a year. Now it costs us $200,000 a year. And with COVID, you still have landlords that are trying to catch up with missed payments from tenants. And I'm just, I'm really happy to be out of brick and mortar. I can't imagine being back in it.
Yeah, there's some super structural challenges there, real estate being one of them.
Don't give me the consulting answer, bro. Yeah. You're like, don't be my consultant right now. There's some super structural, like, tell me, like, give me the shit show, you know what I mean? I actually have a guy that I'm meeting with. Hopefully this comes out after I meet with him, and hopefully I don't like the deal. So he has five, I'll change the facts up a little bit. He has five wedding venues, not in Utah, and he said that he has private equity that is, like, interested in investing in him, and so he's wanting to figure out, you know, what the playbook looks like in order to grow the wedding venues. I don't know if it's like Noah's, right? Noah's declared bankruptcy. They had like, I don't know, 1,000 locations. I think they had a franchise model. It was like an event space, not weddings particularly, but they were taking pieces of real estate and putting these really nice $5-7 million builds up for like a 10,000 square foot hardwood floor event space. Do you remember when Noah's went bankrupt? Did you ever see that stuff?
No.
They had like, I don't know what the numbers were, like tens of millions of dollars of people that had put a deposit down on their event space. And when they declared bankruptcy, they basically said like, we're keeping this. They didn't give any of the money back. And they're like, you know, $5,000 or $6,000 deposits for a lot of people. That's like a massive nut that you can't like just absorb. I think maybe it got solved later on down the road. Jeez. But so my question to you is, in a non-consulting answer, if you saw an investment of somebody that had five wedding venues with the upcoming economy uncertainty, do you think that that will be affected or not affected?
Got to imagine it's going to be affected, right? Now, to what degree, I don't know. It depends on what they do in the space, what all their different revenue streams are. If it's purely renting out the space, the number of people that get married decrease and therefore the demand is down. I don't think so, but they might opt for a cheaper option. So it depends on where they play. Do they play in a space that's a little more luxury or premium? If so, I might say, I'm going to go do the civil ceremony and I'll have a ceremony in the back of my, you know, back of my house where you are, right?
Sure. And interesting.
So it depends.
And it's such a consulting answer. Because an interesting
I would not.
An interesting counterpoint is there's a book from Dan Kennedy that talks about
like marketing to the affluent.
Basically sell to rich people. And what he says is that in down economies, what you find is that if you have a luxury item, I don't know what the data on this, you know, I assume Hermes or the equivalent in a down economy stays stable.
It's resistant. Yeah.
Or resistant versus like the $50, right? Fawn design bag out of Target or whatever. Yeah. The more affordable one.
Yeah.
The more affordable one actually gets crushed.
Absolutely.
While the luxury one stays resistant. Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember many classes I took in business school, but I do remember one. I actually had the good fortune of taking a class with the CEO of Louis Vuitton and your former CEO.
Bernard Arnault?
No, the former CEO of the
brand. Oh, not the chairman.
Yeah, the former CEO of the brand.
Oh, sub.
Not LVMH. Yeah. And he wrote a book called The Luxury Strategy. Fantastic book. If anybody wants to understand.
I feel like I've read this before.
Huh. It is the most well-known book on luxury strategy. His name's Van Bastian.
What's it called?
The Luxury Strategy.
The Luxury Strategy.
And he actually covers this, right? Which is if you have the benefit of a luxury brand, heirloom items, and you are truly pitching to the right segment with your product and your brand, you're going to ride through that economic crisis because they're not going to be affected as much as those who are lower on the totem pole.
Why doesn't he have an audio version? Is this a B-school textbook?
It was, yeah.
It's $50?
For his class, yeah.
And there's no audio version?
And this thing is the Bible for understanding luxury strategy.
And so what's the playbook? The best framework that I've heard on luxury strategy was on the Acquired podcast where they talk about like premium. Premium is where you still have to explain what like the additional features and it's like genuine leather or patent leather or whatever. Like that's all premium, which is... it's extolling like the benefits of it's more dirt, it's bigger, faster, stronger, whatever than everything else, right? It's the equivalent of a BMW is better than a Camry or a Lexus is the premium version of Toyota. And then luxury is where you enter into this world where it's like the upside down world, basically, where it's like you buy it because it's so superfluous.
Yeah.
What's that word?
Superfluous. It's so unnecessary. It's like so extra, right? And the luxury is like, it may not even be better. It's just known to be more expensive. And like, you're wanting to show that you're lighting money on fire.
It has everything to do with the brand, right?
So yeah.
Product feature parity between that, like a Louis Vuitton bag and a bag at Target, they perform the same exact utility, right?
Totally.
The utility is the same. The function is the same. It's the cost and the brand. And when you buy a Louis Vuitton bag, you're buying something, you're buying a lifestyle, right? You're buying into a lifestyle. You're demonstrating to the world that you're a part of that lifestyle. TVs, not luxurious at all. There is no luxury TV because it is purely about product features, right?
Yeah.
So premium. The more expensive the TV, you get better resolution, bigger, you get more features, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there are great explanations of that, but the book is, again, fascinating. It's also very hard to build a net new luxury brand. In fact, LVMH, most of their success has come from acquiring brands that had inherent brand value, equity, and they just had to revamp the operations of the business.
Totally. Yeah. So wedding venue, do you think that it's possible to have luxury wedding venue versus premium? Is a wedding venue a TV or a purse?
I'd say it's a purse.
Well,
again, depends on what kind, I guess, but
it all depends on who they've sold to. And so what I would do is, and that's why I said it depends on the segment. So if they're known as the number one wedding venue in Napa Valley, it's a good chance that that's probably in the luxury category. They've probably distinguished themselves in terms of name and place, where if you're part of the San Fran Bay Area elite, you say, that's the place where I get married, right? Mm-hmm. That's the place. Yeah. That's the only place is the number one spot.
Lakai.
It's the Lakai.
Bobby got married at Lakai. By the time that, you know, the fourth child got married, like, you know, there was, there was a budget. So he got married in a backyard somewhere.
My wife was the favorite.
There you go. Totally there. It's okay. Would you say Lakai is luxury?
You know, I don't know about that, but I'm sure there's some Condé Nast top 10 list. And
would you say relative to a backyard, where would you say Lakai? Where would you put Lakai on?
Maybe just a smidge.
On a spectrum.
They're close. Awesome.
There were,
there's a nice backyard.
I think a new couch was purchased for our
thing. It was a nice backyard.
That's true. I think they put new sod in. I think Bobby actually helped plant some of the flowers for the wedding.
I may have, yeah.
Hey, real quick, if you're a business owner that's doing at least $1 million a year in revenue on a digital or coaching business, we'd love to talk to you. If you go to dealmaven.io and apply on our page, we will get in touch with you and see if we can take your great business and make it even better. And so, tech enthusiast.
I think I actually have a real quick question on that. So a lot of like the people with the podium, they've been in the venture capital, they survived the dot-com bubble. Like, what would you say for, similar to the wedding venue question, to anyone who's going into, like, what is that opportunity that's coming up that people could probably look for like any like tech companies during this recession, so-called, whatever we're in?
Yeah, I think for any tech company, it's going to weed out the underperformers pretty quickly. There's a great tweet I saw from an investor, actually an investor at podiums from IVP. Tom Lavaro, and he more or less alluded to that it's going to be a bloodbath. And there are going to be a lot of businesses that die because they grew up in a world where money was cheap, easy to raise capital before you had product market fit, before you could truly build a good revenue base, good customer base. And if you don't have those things and you're used to burning, it's very hard to turn that off.
Yeah.
And so I think the opportunity is, if you've got a good base of customers, you've got a good business, if you can lean out your business, if you can become more operationally efficient, you're actually set up for the good times, right? Mm. If you can increase your margins, if you can increase your ability to acquire customers in a cost-efficient way, you're set up for what will be the next growth cycle. And by the way, there are tons of fantastic examples of companies that were born in down cycles, the Airbnbs of the world, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure, yeah.
And so I think there's opportunity, one, in terms of running a cleaner business, and two, for the innovators with the new ideas to come to market with those new ideas in that environment, you know, start lean, figure out the problem, hopefully find product market fit and go from there.
What do you feel like the difference is between working at a place like Bain, where it's a bunch of knowledge workers that are, I assume it's a lot like a law firm where it's more of a confederacy of knowledge workers versus kind of more boots on the ground operating business where you're a knowledge worker on a team of like a super diverse skill set in terms of sales guys, ops guys, customer service, a CEO with an ego potentially? Like, what's been like the biggest upside of going from heavy knowledge work to more industry, and then like the biggest frustration?
Great question. I mean, look, professional services, law, consulting, iBanking, whatever, white collar professional services, you're more or less renting brain power mm-hmm. to a handful of businesses that have a specific use case and can afford to pay for that, but it's advisory by its very nature. And so you're ultimately in the, you know, case of a consultant being paid to put together a really expensive strategic framework, process, way to improve the business, an answer to a problem. But at the end of the day, somebody else is going to go execute against that. They're going to go and run the playbook. They're going to go and try to actually do the thing you tell them to do.
Yeah.
Whereas the bankers, you were playing the middleman to ultimately increase the flow of liquidity of capital, yeah. right? It's ultimately one or two steps removed from, I think, the core action that's occurring, which is this, the product or service that's being provided to the end customer. And in the world of tech, it's much more around that, right? Building a product or service and putting that physically or digitally in the hands of a business that needs it to survive, yeah. right? So I think the fun thing there is just the ability to create impact. You can do advisory work, but to go in and work with customers firsthand to inform what the product needs to be, to change that product, to teach people how to use that product,
yeah.
ultimately could drive a lot more change. And I found that to be pretty impactful personally versus kind of creating the fancy slide deck. And the hardest thing is also kind of related to that, dealing with people, right? And dealing with people from a much wider diaspora yeah. in terms of SMB businesses, because you think of your average SMB business owner, whether it's a nail salon or a dog walker or the GM of an auto dealer, those are very different than, let's say, yeah. the CEO of an actual auto manufacturer
yeah.
that's global. And so I think working with people and different types of people presents a challenge for sure.
Yeah, that's a frustration.
Can be amazing. Depends on the
such
individual.
A yeah. Yeah. That's such double speak, bro. You don't even recognize it.
Can't be great. Can't be amazing. You just get more of it, right? Your mileage varies every interaction.
So when I read Bob Iger's book,
yeah,
of
Ride of a Lifetime,
like being the CEO of Disney, and hearing, again, I was running a trampoline park business. And so I had left going to a big Manhattan office or a big office in downtown Dallas, feeling important on pressing a high number on the elevator of what floor I was on. And I think hearing him talk about the boardroom fights and like the flying to meet with the presidents and like playing the game at that level of sophistication, it was a game that I had left so early on that when I had listened to it, I felt like I missed it. I was like, oh, that feels badass. And I don't know if that path is like forever foreclosed to me. You know, how do I go from making sure that this old grocery store looks like a good trampoline park to opening up Disneyland Paris, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What does that path look like? How do I get back? How do I get back into the fold? Like, what does the prodigal son have to do to get back? And do you feel that dichotomy ever, like in terms of going from that level of meeting with the CEOs? Like, obviously, it's a static picture of it. And so you forget the fact that you didn't see your family for 5 days. You know what I mean? And so like you forget all of the motion around that one moment that looks appealing to the outside. Because I know like you've been doing field work of like, you know, going and meeting with a restaurant owner about putting in a credit card reader. You know what I mean? That's like real work, you know? And was there ever did you ever feel that? Have you felt that of like, ooh, I kind of wish I had a sports coat on right now?
No, I don't think I've thought as much about maybe missing, you know, wearing the suit. And look, like, it's a pretty romanticized thing, the boardroom, doing the big deal,
yeah.
working at that level, right? And it's probably a product of, we're all in the U.S. It's an incredibly capitalistic society.
Yeah.
The first question you ask any guy you meet is, so what do you do?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Totally.
We judge each other by our jobs. And we were taught that from day one.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the value we create. And I think the lesson that I've had to learn over time is I find way more personal satisfaction in terms of the value I personally drive, that I create. And you can define that in all sorts of ways.
Sure.
Right? If I feel like that's real and tangible to me, that matters far more than the job title, the button I push for the highest floor in the building, all of that. So no.
What's the highest floor that you've ever been to in an office?
Been to? I don't know.
No, office from. Because I worked at the Condé Nast building. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, most people haven't. It's Times Square. It's New York. You probably don't know. You probably don't know, but you probably lived in Hoboken or something.
Something like that. Yeah, no, I don't ask myself that question.
When you're going and you're meeting with the bar owner and like, hey, man, this could be great for you for $300 a month. You could be a podium premium. There's no, you never feel that.
I'm not really in that position too frequently. I relish the chance to meet with small business owners because my parents, my mom owned a flower shop when I was a kid, owned an antique shop. We say this, but SMBs, and I believe it, it's not a podium thing. It's just, this is real life. SMBs are the backbone of America. You've operated one.
Yeah.
Most of the businesses we frequent are SMBs, right? And they serve local customers. And so I think they matter a lot. And yeah, I have fun with that.